Week 17 NFL preview, folks. Bills, Eagles, Bears, 49ers, and more. Welcome to the special Christmas Eve Wednesday edition of the Schatz and Tenier NFL podcast from FTN Fantasy. I'm Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He's Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack at miketenier.substack.com. We take your comments and questions, and we'll be previewing week 17 in the NFL, which is sort of interesting because the way things have shaken out this year, there are basically no playoff spots up for grabs.
Isn't it weird? Like, you're basically waiting on, like, the NFC South and the AFC North to...
There's only a slight chance. I think the Ravens need to win out and have the Steelers lose out, which they do play each other next week. But that would require the Steelers to lose to the Browns this week.
Right, which is unlikely.
And the AFC South, the Colts are slightly alive. I guess they have to win out and have the Texans lose out and then maybe have other stuff happen too, but...
Right.
Unlikely. We're just waiting for the NFC South. And the way it is if, unless the Bucks lose and the Panthers win this week, next week's Panthers Bucks game is for the division.
And will probably be the night game.
And will be the Sunday night game.
We brought this upon ourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Also, this week we have three Christmas games, which stink.
And yeah, that's the other terrible thing that happened is these three Christmas games that probably looked very good when they first put the schedule together do not look good now. In particular, I mean, I think Kansas City, Denver, everybody, if people would have expected if one of those teams was out of it was going to be Denver, not Kansas City. But the Christmas games are made worse by the injuries. I mean, the fact that Kansas City is down to Chris Oladokun as their quarterback is a bummer.
Or Steve Buschel, who they had to pull off of somebody else's practice squad. And you know what? Good. Let's not force games onto Christmas Wednesday. That's goofy.
Yeah. Okay? Well, Thursday this year, but yeah, I mean, it's going to be every year. I mean, we just get ready for it. The NFL is taking Christmas, no matter what day it is. The NFL is taking Christmas now.
Yeah, well, you get what you deserve here at this point. Enjoy your Max Brosmer Bowl, okay?
Teams are still playing. Teams are still playing for seeding.
Yes,
that's what's still up for grabs, and there are good games on Saturday. So let's start with the Saturday games with 4:30. The 10-5 Texans at the 11-4 Chargers. The Texans win their division 35% if they win, but only 4% if they lose. The Chargers win their division 34% if they win and only 7% if they lose. So if they want to win their divisions, you have to win this game. Whoever loses this game is basically a wild card.
Injury reports, by the way, this week are tricky. It is Wednesday. Teams are on reduced schedules. Sometimes the beat writers are on reduced schedules.
This will become really important when we get to the next game.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Packers injury report is like Anna Karenina. It's like the 12 days of Christmas. Chargers, let's see here. Mekhi Becton did not practice a knee injury. That's a problem. Another loss on their offensive line. Jamari Salyer, who was at left tackle for like a week or two, is hurt. Good news is Trey Pipkins is probably back. You can't tell one offensive tackle from the Chargers without a program. But on the other side of the ball, Texans do not practice include both cornerbacks Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley, as well as both offensive tackles Trent Brown and Arante Ursay. Everybody finished the game last week except Ursary, the left tackle, but they're all in the do not practice, and that's something you really got to keep an eye on.
These are the two worst offensive lines in the league.
Oh, officially, like mathematically?
By ESPN's pass block win rate and by everything you see with your own eyes.
Right. Well, the Texans, that's true. And then for the Chargers, it's like, well, the edges are destroyed. So, like, it's all comedy.
The Texans are only 29th rushing the ball. The Chargers' run defense is actually 8th since week 10.
Okay.
So it's going to be hard to run the ball. However, since week 10, the Texans have improved to 9th passing. That's remarkable. That is the power of Nico Collins and C.J. Stroud right there.
C.J. Stroud, Nico, I think there's a Davis Mills game in there too. But they got their guys back. That is certainly helping. Obviously, getting Stroud back makes a difference.
The Chargers' pass defense has been better in recent weeks. Their pass offense has been worse, although that's the tackles.
Yeah. Again, it's rotating tackles. And it looked like Salyer actually solidified left tackle a little bit. So having him rotate out is not ideal.
And this was a fun stat I found. CJ Stroud is the worst quarterback in the league this year throwing deep. And the Chargers are the best defense in the league against deep throws. There will not be very many successful deep throws for the Houston Texans.
Probably not many successful deep throws in this game because of the pass rushes. Because I think one of the problems Stroud has is there's never time. And there's not that super duper vertical threat. I mean,
but even when there is time and he launches it deep, it's not probably because there is no time. And so he's trying to launch it deep, but without the time to really set it up right.
Right. Or he's throwing under duress, whatever. And then who's downfield if it's not Nico? There's no burner.
One other stat I've got, which is if you want to play Dalton Schultz in your fantasy playoff final, the Chargers are 29th against tight ends.
Do it. They like checking down the Schultz. You get
if
those
you have Kittle, who might we'll get to that, but might have an ankle sprain. So if you need a backup tight end, Dalton Schultz is an interesting pick this week. I forgot to write down the lines.
Oh, you want me to grab them real quick?
Hold on a second. I'll open up that has the lines. I usually write down the lines on my little cheat sheet. The Chargers are favored by 2 at home, which is interesting because it means Vegas essentially sees these teams as equal, whereas DVOA has the Texans 5th and the Chargers 14th.
Right. And that very simple matchup of the Texans edge rushers against the Chargers tackles is such a everything else defining mismatch that I find it hard to worry about anything except the Texans. You got to take the Texans and assume that Herbert's never going to have a chance to do anything.
I think I would also take the Texans in this game, even though it is in Los Angeles. We can again have debates about how much home field advantage means to the two Los Angeles teams, although I think it means a little bit more to the Rams than it does to the Chargers.
They have fans.
They sort of got to Los Angeles first, and so they built a stronger fan base. Although, people come up from San Diego and everything. But
do that.
I'm going to go Texans on this one.
We're going Texans.
All right. Now the nobody knows who's playing quarterback bowl. The 7-8 Ravens at the 9-5-1 Packers. Ravens make the playoffs 7% of the time if they win. They are out if they lose.
Yes.
The Packers are in if they win, and they win the division 23% of the time with a win. If they lose, they're still in the playoffs 87% of the time.
Yeah, there's no –
Detroit also still has a chance, but it's a very small chance.
Right. Lions are the only team that are out there saying, well, if we win out and get help, right? That's the only – team. Nobody else is in the win.
No, the Ravens, I think, have to win out and get help. Okay.
And NFC.
I think the Colts are still in it. They have to win out and get a lot of help.
Right. NFC, though, it is only the Lions hanging around out there in the wilderness. Okay.
Here's some since week 10 stats that are interesting. The Ravens have gone from 11th to 28th passing,
okay,
from 16th to 4th running.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the Ravens' defense has gone from 22nd to 14th against the pass and from 18th to 5th against the run.
So
their defense is playing much better.
Right.
But Lamar Jackson is having probs.
Speaking of Lamar, he is officially day-to-day with the back injury. He said, here's the bright side, he did not aggravate any of the other injuries. So he didn't, when he hurt his back, also hurt his toe, ankle, whatever else there. That's on that side of things. Of course, Lamar will probably wind up playing, but we won't know for sure because it'll be like a Ministry of Pop.
And the Ravens, if Lamar doesn't play, Huntley can do a reasonable job.
Yes.
Of approximating Lamar.
Especially when they're running well, which they were in the second half against the Patriots.
The problem is on the other side, although it doesn't sound like it's going to be, Jordan Love is in concussion protocol.
Yes.
And Malik Willis has a shoulder injury.
But.
Which means if they're both out, it's the Clayton Toon show.
Tommy Toons.
But it sounds like at least one of them will be able to play.
Jordan Love did practice, which is an encouraging sign. Now, of course, concussion protocol came to a Saturday. That's iffy. But Malik Willis said he should be ready to play. He says everything's smooth, quote unquote smooth. So it seems very unlikely that both of them are going to be out the way the conversation's going around that team. But the Packers overall injury report, as has been widely talked about on the internet, has 21 players on it. 21 players, including
Merry Christmas.
Josh Jacobs is on there. He's been like limping onto the field, doing what he can, limping off. Most of the offensive line was limited or not available during the walkthroughs that they did yesterday.
Jordan Love is interesting. He has been one of the best quarterbacks against the blitz for most of the season, but he's only 16th against the blitz since week 10. That is important because the Ravens can't get a pass rush without a blitz, just like we talked about last week with Drake May.
Neither team can now that Micah's gone.
That's probably true, actually.
Yeah, both teams are like, front four can't do anything. Let's blitz, and let's hope the blitz doesn't get picked up. And both fourth quarters last week were the story of, oh, the other team picked up the blitz, and the other quarterback just threw it over you. Game over.
Hitchhiker's Pie says, does Malik Willis stay in Green Bay or get a bridge job elsewhere?
That's a good question. I'd take him.
Because I wonder, will another coach be able to make Malik Willis work the way that Matt LaFleur has made Malik Willis work?
It's got to be a Shanahan family coach, I think.
But if you're a Malik Willis, you obviously want the chance to start. If you get a chance to start somewhere, you're taking that. You're leaving Green Bay.
And I think what happened is that he was not ready, workplace ready, as a quarterback, maybe as a young individual, in Tennessee, wound up in Vrabel's poop list, his naughty list, etc. He's grown into the role. He has actually developed. And again, he's still more of a running quarterback who does like an RPO type thing, but a useful guy. And so in that case, the Titans developed him for the Packers, who then developed him to maybe be the bridge in Miami.
Yeah. Matthew Carley says, small sample size, but he looked really good. I'm not thinking of last week. I'm thinking of last year.
Yes.
And it last year was a larger sample size, and he looked good.
Right. Now, what you're almost always seeing is that kind of RPO-heavy system. But if you're talking about your bridge, and he's kind of grown into being able to do that, it's like, well, that's what your bridge quarterback can do. And you get out there, and if you have a LaFleur, or Shanahan, McVay-type system, and you can integrate that kind of stuff, you can get production out of Willis.
The line is Green Bay minus 2.5.
With no knowledge of who's quarterbacking either.
Although, I mean, that may have changed since I last marked it down, because as news comes out about who may or may not be quarterbacking, this line, and as particular the over-under total, will change. Because if you know it's going to be Lamar Jackson and Jordan Love, I've got to think the over-under total goes up.
Right now it's Packers minus 3, over-under is 40.5. I'm feeling that over. By the way, very mild temperatures in Green Bay that night, so that won't be a factor. When you're down at 40.5, and you probably have capable backups, and you have two teams with no pass rushes, I feel like you can clear 40.5.
Yeah, and I'm going to go Packers as my pick.
I'll go Packers because I'm just kind of out on the Ravens. Like, it's just – it's not the year. Like, it's just not happening.
Let's go to Sunday. The biggest 1 o'clock game on Sunday is the 12-3 Seahawks at the 8-7 Panthers.
Yes.
The Seahawks get the one seed 63% of the time if they win and 11% if they lose. A lot for them depends on that week 18 game with the 49ers.
Oh, yes.
The Panthers make the playoffs 71% if they win, 46% if they lose. But really, a lot depends on the game that the Buccaneers have with the Dolphins, which is at the same time. Because assuming the Buccaneers beat the Dolphins, this game doesn't matter. All that matters is next week.
Yes, and keep in mind, these are the odd week Panthers. Did I do that right? These are the odd week Panthers. They're the bad Panthers.
This is a odd week, yes.
Not the even week Panthers, who are the good Panthers, if you are believing in that long-term trend that's been going on.
I got to admit, I looked at the splits for this game, and I could not find a reason to believe in the Panthers at all. I don't know how they're doing this.
Right.
The idea that the Panthers could beat this Seahawks team, and yet they beat the Rams.
They beat the Rams? They beat the Packers.
Who are as good as the Seahawks, if not better.
Right.
The Panthers' offense since week 10 is 10th passing the ball, but has dropped to 22nd rushing the ball.
Right. And still trying to be a run-heavy offense for obvious reasons. That should be their strength.
Bryce Young is much better deep than short, but the Seahawks are the number 3 defense against deep passes.
You know, somebody put in my comment thread, the last team to have this win-loss-win-loss-win-loss-win-loss record for this long was the 1994 Colts.
Detroit has it too, by the way.
But
Detroit also goes win-loss this year.
Okay. I think that they've been doing it longer in Carolina. The fellow said the last one that had this long was the 1994 Colts, who were quarterbacked by Jim Harbaugh. In my brain, I start comparing Bryce Young to Jim Harbaugh, and I kind of see it.
Yeah, head coach Bryce Young.
Right, head coach Bryce, yeah, and like this pesky, ornery little guy who like makes big plays but like isn't really all that good, but is just like gung-ho, like let's get it done guy. I kind of saw it there.
The Panthers have the weird split where they allow very big games to number one wide receivers and almost nothing to number two wide receivers. That is not a good split to have against the Seattle Seahawks.
Right, and what they'll probably do is try and get Jaxon Smith-Njigba but in the slot, get him away from Jackson and Horn. And if you can get a guy away from Jaxon and Horn, you're probably going to have success against the rest of the Panther secondary.
Also, I know a lot of people, I talk a lot about quarter-to-quarter splits usually don't matter in the future, but the first quarter kind of does because the whole script thing.
Right.
The Seahawks are third in the first quarter. They have good scripts.
Yes.
The Panthers' defense is 10th in the first quarter. They're actually good against the script. They're not as good in the rest of the game.
All right. I thought it's because they're always facing some team like the Buccaneers that's like half.
Panthers, by the way, are the second worst defense in the league on third down. Only Dallas is worse. Again, I don't understand how they beat the Rams, and I don't understand how they won the game.
And the Packers. There are all these games where you're like, how did this happen? And each one has its own little bespoke explanation. Doesn't seem to carry over to the next week.
Mina Kimes says about the Panthers what you and I say about the Falcons.
Which is
never
bet on them.
Guess what's going to happen in their games.
Never bet on them. We made some money on the second half comeback, so there was that.
Seahawks -7 in Carolina. It's so obvious that you should go Seahawks here that I would bet the Panthers cover.
I don't like the 7.5. Because of the way the
Seahawks last time I looked, but it might be 7.5 now.
I think it's 7.5 was this morning, and it's like I just don't like it when you have a West Coast team coming to the East Coast playing early game. All these other things that I know, if you look at them statistically, don't work out. I don't love it. I don't like the Seahawks offense in the first.
The thing about the West Coast teams at 1 o'clock used to be a thing, and in the last few years, it's gone away.
They probably have figured out how to get everybody's sleep schedule more online and keep them out of the clubs or whatever. But it's like a tiny enough thing where if I don't like the line, it's just I don't like the line. Don't do it.
The biggest 4 o'clock game, and it's nationally televised. This will be on everywhere. Is the 10-5 Eagles at the 11-4 Bills? Now here's the thing: the Eagles, it's almost meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they get the 2 seed 27% of the time if they win.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to win this game and have a lot of other stuff go their way to get the 2 seed, which gives them a home game in the second round.
Yes, yes.
And the right to host the NFC Championship game if the 1 seed loses.
And you could have a staggering Packers team with nobody left coming in if there are.
So there is a reason to want the 2 seed. I think the Eagles have reason to definitely play this game hard.
Yes.
But it means a lot less to them than it does to the Bills. The Bills mm-hmm. win the division 30% of the time if they win this game.
Yes. Although Sean McDermott was making these sort of grunting noises about, well, now that we've clinched a playoff spot, some of our health concerns, we may like bench guys. I don't think he's going to do that in this game, but I think it's on his mind. It certainly does not apply to
if
Josh.
If the Patriots beat the Jets and it drops the Bills' odds of winning the division to like 15% or something, then he might in week 18 and just assume the Patriots are going to beat the Dolphins.
Right. And that would imply possibly to Jordan Poyer, who was limping at the end of the game after he had the big game. Dalton Kincaid is another guy who's sort of on the borderline where it's like a health issue. I'll just give everybody the Josh Allen quote. Hey, feels good, ready to go, still sore, they had the walkthrough today. So really not a practice, but feeling good and planning on playing. Josh Allen, of course, will be out there at like 96% of his normal health. So he'll be Josh Allen.
Every game you discuss with the Bills, you have to discuss their run defense, which is really bad. If you want Saquon like got back on track last week, against a bad run defense, here's another one.
Yes.
To rock with all the, you want Saquon to feel good about himself. Boy, oh boy, here you go, man. This is the game.
Right.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Judkins was playing well before that serious injury. Samson came in and played well. When we're talking about the Browns running the ball when everyone knows they're not going to be throwing the ball downfield, this is a rough Bills defense, especially right up the middle.
And everything that you talk about with the Eagles, you have to talk about the very weird receiver splits, where they are awesome against wide receiver one and others, but terrible mm-hmm. against wide receiver two, except that with the Bills, I don't know who that is. So it sort of just depends on who Adoree Jackson is on.
Yes, it's the Adoree split.
They're number one against tight ends, which is very mm-hmm. good against good right. thing for playing the Bills.
Right.
And they're 25th against running backs as receivers, which is a bad thing for playing the Bills.
Right. Right. Although if you can shut down the tight ends and say you're beating us with your backs, you're in pretty good shape.
Eagles defense, by the way, since week 10 has gone from 15 to 2 against the pass. And from 23 to 11 against the run.
A little bit of that, of course, is playing the Kenny Pickett Raiders, but that's factored in to statistics as best as you can.
Well, I mean, the rate, you know, we adjust for opponent. I don't adjust for Pickett any different than Smith, but Smith has sucked all year, and Janty is not, you know, they haven't blocked for him. So that, you know, those adjustments are basically the same whether Pickett played or not.
And in that game, there was force feed Bowers the ball. And the Eagles were like, okay, gain of three, we'll tackle you. So, like, they have a system for that.
Here's something interesting I found while working on an ESPN piece, by the way. The Hurts gap against man and against zone has almost disappeared.
Okay.
In the first half of the season, he really struggled against zone. And last year, he was not as good against zone. In the second half of this season, he has been much better against zone.
I don't know
why. Instead, what's shown up is that Hurts is 20th against blitzes.
Mm-hmm.
And since week 10, he is 30th against blitzes.
One thought is not having Lane Johnson.
Yes.
Okay. One thought is where the situations these blitzes are coming in. That might be part of it as well. But, you know, the Eagles should have a solution for the blitz. They've got two great wide receivers. If you're isolating them, that should be the win.
Where does the Eagles' rushing offense – oh, I don't have rushing and passing split into weighted. Frazier wants to know where the Eagles' rushing offense ranks in weighted DVOA. I don't have that easy to access.
It would take me a minute to grab it off of here.
Where the game is Bills minus two. That's a real hard line to pick. I think these two teams are basically equal and the game is in Buffalo.
Right, and it will be rain showers in the forecast, but it will not be an icy Bills late December type of game there. Going to lean Eagles, I guess, a little bit because, you know, if you're down to resting Dalton Kincaid and you've got that usual problem with the Bills receivers and the Bills have another slow start and the Eagles are running the ball better, you know.
I think you're right. I think I would favor Eagles because they want to run. That's their personality.
Right.
They want to run early and get out ahead and then run. Mm-hmm. And this is the run defense to do that against. I think it's not a good matchup for the Bills. Frazier Lamont points out that the Bills don't tend to blitz a lot and probably don't have personnel in the secondary to succeed if they do. Well, I mean, Benford's good, but yeah.
Right. I got some of these blitz statistics. I really have to look at like what situations the team was in too. Although the Bills were behind a lot, which is where a team might be more inclined to take a risk and blitz.
Hitchhiker's Pie asks, are the Patriots still tracking for the easiest schedule ever? It's the third easiest schedule. Most of the season, they've been tracking for the third easiest schedule ahead of the 99 Rams and the 91 Bills.
99 Rams are a great example of what you can do with an easy schedule, folks.
And right. Both of those teams made the Super Bowl.
Right. You can climb over these things, get to that favorable edge, get your wins. So.
Although the 99 Rams were taking on that easy schedule and beating them by 30 points every week.
Right.
Which is a little different from what the Patriots have done this year.
Right.
8 o'clock game. This is good. 11-4 Bears at the 11-4 49ers.
Yes.
Bears win their division with a win. 49ers win the division 40% of the time if they win. They need to win this game and then beat Seattle in week 18 in order to win the division. And then they're the one seed, I believe.
Packers might also lose and the Bears have clinched.
Bears win the division 78% of the time if they lose.
If the Packers lose.
If the Bears lose, which reflects the possibility of the Packers losing.
The Packers aren't eliminated with the loss.
If the Bears lose, the Packers are not eliminated. The Bears win. The Bears are first in pass block win rate. And really? The 49ers have no pass rush at all.
They have none. I was just watching that game.
Caleb Williams, since week 10, is third against the blitz. So even if they blitz, Caleb's been very good against the blitz recently.
You're playing into his hands when you blitz. You're playing into him.
Scramble to the right is what he's going to do.
Yeah, scramble to the right. Or it's just like, oh, I've got one solution. It's over there. I'll go get it.
Here's the other thing about playing the Bears. The 49ers are 28th in adjusted line yards on runs up the middle.
Defense, you mean?
Yes, and the Bears run a lot of outside and inside zone. And the 49ers are near the bottom of the league against both outside zone and inside zone. So they're just going to keep running on you. And they're number one in second level yards, which means they get a lot of runs that are 6 and 7 and 8 yards. Not a lot of 30s.
No.
But lots of 6s and 7s and 8s. So Brock Purdy is going to have to dominate to win this game.
Brock Purdy has to dominate. Okay.
Above average defense going into that game. That's what's wild. He's got all his parts, or at least you think he does, because George Kittle has the ankle sprain.
Yes.
And may not be able to play.
Yes. The news is George Kittle ankle injury, not as serious as it looked, but that doesn't mean he's going to be out there Sunday. They're thinking with the playoffs. A couple of Bears injuries. Roma Dunze, when Ben Johnson was talking about his injury, he was talking about how he was going to be able to help the team this season, which sounds like a coach saying we're going to get him ready for the playoffs. Luther Burton, it's a little bit iffy. So, again, Williams might have that depleted receiving core. He had that receiving core last week, and they managed to get that win.
Frazier wants to know, as of right now, what is the 49ers' chance of the number one seed? We give them 25% chance of the number one seed.
I'm shocked that they still have one, but that's...
They win this game and beat the Seahawks. I believe they are the one seed. I think that is whether the Seahawks win this week or not. If the 49ers win this game and beat the Seahawks, they will have the tiebreakers over the Seahawks.
Remarkable.
So effectively what that gives them is kind of a 50-50 shot to win each game. It's actually more like 55 or 60 to win this game and 45 or something to win next week. But yeah, right. Purdy is the best quarterback in the league this year, throwing to the outside or less than 15 air yards.
He is 35th
throwing deep or in the middle, which is weird. Because I know you want to be like, yeah, that's Purdy's game, but it's not. In past years, Purdy has been much better throwing deep than this and much better throwing up the middle than this.
They had better options deep in years past. And you had Jennings healthy all the time.
And Pearsall is hurt.
Right now. And the thing is, I always thought he throws over the middle extremely well. I never thought of deep passes, but like the 5 to 15 range.
I mean, deep is the two big differences between Purdy and Garoppolo and everyone else that San Francisco's had, Mac Jones and everything, is one, deep, and two, out of structure.
Yes, right. He can do some out of structure they can't.
And the Bears' defense is roughly even everywhere. So there's no particular, like, this is where in the Bears' pass defense you should attack. Their problems are slot receivers.
Okay.
They're not as good against slot receivers. But what's interesting is if you look at the coverage DVOA, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is fine. It's when you get a slot receiver up against anybody else. Nick McCloud, who was in that position before Gardner-Johnson showed up, a safety or a linebacker.
So you got guys. Well, they had a lot of backup linebackers. They're trying to avoid putting Byard in the slot, and anytime you see him deep as often as possible, so he could be like the veteran back there.
It would be Brisker or Edmonds if Edmonds is back.
Right.
That's where you get in trouble against slot receivers for the Bears.
Right, but C.J. Gardner-Johnson's in that little honeymoon period before he pisses everyone off on the in the
organization. That honeymoon period will last until the end of this season.
Which, yes, we'll get them to February. We'll get them to the playoffs. And then they'll trade him for anything. Stat,
and this is one that's going to back up, I think, how you feel about Caleb Williams.
All right.
Caleb Williams has only 6 picks, but FTN has him with 17 turnover-worthy throws. That's, I think, the worst ratio in the league. Or the best ratio, the luckiest ratio.
When I talk about those twinsy games from last week, it's like he threw an interceptable ball to McKinney right before a completion to kick the field goal, just like May threw an interceptable ball right before the 4th-and-2 completion to dig. So it's like, yeah, that margin for error was so fine, and both of them executed there. But, yeah, there's these things Caleb is getting away with. I don't want to minimize his development, his growth and all, but, like, there is a little bit of a halo effect because the team is winning. There's, like, all these deficiencies in his game that Johnson's covering up for, the running game's covering up for, dropped interceptions or maybe show a little bit of a mirage there. And it's something that could impact him in any of these weeks coming up.
NYC Gator says this game could be an all-time letdown spot for the Bears after the game and its meaning because it was the Packers. You know, yeah. I'm not an expert on sports psychology.
Right.
I have a very hard time imagining that a game against an 11-4 opponent with important playoff implications is a letdown game.
Yeah.
I know that win last week was incredible at the end. I know it was the Packers. I know there was so much emotion. I feel like these guys are professionals. They still can get up for this one weekly.
I think so, right. This isn't some out-of-conference opponent or anything. Add an extra day, too. If that matters at all, they had an extra day. They woke up on Sunday. They were all excited. They had a big breakfast. They watched all the other games. They could settle down. It's not like they did that on Monday night and then they're turning around and they're still on some kind of a emotional adrenaline high or something.
49ers minus 3.
You talk me into the Bears, man.
I think Bears to cover.
Oh, you're not, the way you were talking about this, it sounded like a Bears W.
You know what? This is one of those games where you're like, don't pick a team to cover unless you think they can win. I think the Bears are hot and I think they can win.
Mm-hmm.
But I like them even more to cover.
It's all the matchup stuff you said and watching that Niners defense in the first half in particular of that game where it's like you do not have the guys right now to compete against some of these better opponents if they can score against you and they can shut you down a little bit.
Yeah. All right, that does it for today, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Merry Christmas. Have a great holiday. Enjoy not watching football if you don't want to watch one-sided games. And, we'll be back next Monday to review this whole weekend, 11 a.m. Eastern on Monday, to review this whole weekend and preview Monday night, which is a Falcons game. We love Falcons games.
God. No!
All right. We'll be back on Monday. So long. Happy holidays. Talk to you then.
Merry Christmas.